We start most weeks Monday afternoons with Elise Link, the real estate and financial wellness expert. Welcome again, Elise. How are you?
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
You have a prosperous weekend?
Well, it was relaxing in any case. Still trying to get over this little cold I have, but doing better.
You sound only moderately congested. I wouldn't have thought about it until you brought it up. You're okay, huh?
Yep, doing fine.
Do you apologize to everyone when you have a cold now and say, don't worry, it's not you know what?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. And people are very, very worried when they hear you cough, ever, even if you're double masked. So I was on the airplane trying very hard not to cough or even breathe, because I don't want to make people nervous.
Yeah, and it's so expensive to charter your own flight, so you've got to get on the plane with everybody else and then just hope you don't make a fuss, right?
That's right. And you've got, it's very interesting. There's new signage up in airports all over the country. I was down in Miami, but at O'Hare, we're seeing it as well, and other places where really trying to raise awareness that getting angry and laying your hands on a flight attendant is a really bad idea. So they are very clear that there will be immediate response from the airlines. And if you make trouble, so they don't want any trouble on these airplanes anymore.
I said making a fuss. I guess that's why you went down that path. You didn't have any incidents on your flight, did you?
No, everybody was very well behaved, I was pleased to say. But I did wonder, there were a couple of people who got on and I thought, I don't know if they're going to be settling down. But they did, and it was all fine.
Wow, judge much? But I did the same thing the last time I was on a plane. I thought, okay, which of you knuckleheads is going to be the one that's going to go viral? And it was without incident as well.
Yeah, I think that's really the best way. And there's plenty of things going on in the world. I didn't need it to go on in my airplane. So happily, it was a smooth flight.
Speaking of which, the stock market is giving back some of last week's gains. Not all of it, but it's not a banner day, is it?
No, it really isn't. But boy, did we hit some new highs last week. So we're down a lot. And right now the Dow is down about 3.25. S&P is down about 32. And NASDAQ is down about 165, about a little over 1%. I'm not surprised at the pullbacks, but there's a bunch of things that are specifically making, I think, the markets wobbly. One is the virus news, that Omicron is in the majority of states in the U.S. Boris Johnson, heads up the U.K., said that someone died of Omicron. And so now we're finding maybe it's a little more dangerous than we thought. And then we also have Al Erian, who is the prognosticator about bonds, talking about how calling inflation transitory might have been the, quote, worst inflation call in the history of the Fed. Certainly making the markets nervous today.
Why so?
Why is it? Because he doesn't think it's transitory at all. And he thinks that, and this came up at my real estate editor's conference last week, it was interesting that Jerome Powell was calling inflation transitory until right after he got the job for the next round, and then suddenly it became a lot more permanent.
Well, I wonder what the definition of transitory is. Is it possible that we're still under conditions that would make it transitory and that they will dissipate? The supply chain isn't cleared up. The people are not going back to work. Those are all functions of that transitional or transitory period when COVID hit. I suppose it becomes a moot point if your transitory inflation lasts a couple of years, then it's not transitory, is it?
Well, it depends how you think about, a couple of years. Like for a lot of us, the last 2 years have felt like a decade. So having inflation jump up as much as it's jumping up right now, which is, a pretty high number, I think is making a lot of things unstable in the economy. And while we're seeing incomes go up, they're not going up by as much as inflation is causing other things to go up. And that it makes people very nervous as well.
It's 12:15 on WGN. Let's talk a little bit about businesses, how many of them launched in the last year. Let's also talk a little bit more about that real estate conference that you hosted. Lee Sklink's on a line. Talk to me a little bit about that real estate conference you did. What were you guys talking about?
So the National Association of Real Estate Editors held its annual conference, 55th annual, first one in person in 2 years. It was very nice to see everybody. We had real estate editors and writers from across the country who were with us, which was great. But we also had on a panel that I did looking at foreclosures and people in forbearance and how everybody's personal finances might affect that in 2022. And so we had the chief economist of the Mortgage Bankers Association. He was on with us. We had somebody from Adams Solutions and Realty Track, Rick Sharga, knows a lot, been in the business a long time. And then somebody from a new kind of a fintech company called Unlock, which basically allows you to borrow money. They co-invest with you in your house. They don't do it as a loan, but instead of taking out a home equity loan, this is a way to tap the equity in your house. And so the three of us sat together and we talked a lot about the market and why it's so different now from 12 years ago.
I don't know if I want to share the equity in my house with somebody else.
Well, if you were, for example, and obviously not happening, but there are some financial issues that happen to people, either it's an extreme medical bill that has to be paid, or if, for example, somebody is getting a divorce and one person wants to stay in the house but can't afford to buy the other person out, this is a way to tap that equity.
What were some of the takeaways from your discussion with them? What do you all, were you forecasting 2022?
They were, actually. And so the chief economist of the Mortgage Bankers believes that interest rates are going to hit 4% next year, maybe even higher. So this is a really smart time to get your last minute refinancings in. We're already starting to see mortgage lenders let their loan officers go. Better.com had an event last week, you may have seen, where the CEO fired 900 people on a Zoom call, made fun of them, and then found himself out for the, who knows, foreseeable future, maybe forever. So,
oh, really?
How do people lost their jobs?
I heard the first part of that story, and it seemed ridiculous. But then whoever was in charge of him let him go, at least for the time being?
That is correct. The board, I think it was their board of directors, thought it would be a good idea for the CEO to step down for a while, think about what he was doing.
Put him in timeout, maybe forever, from that company. I mean, wow. What are you guys saying about the inventory for 2022?
Well, it's extremely low. And so one of the ways you know how low it is that people are going to contract in several places around the country right now, from listing their property to contract in less than 6 days. We're also seeing the lowest level of homes on the market ever in most places around the country. We also saw home prices that have jumped up overall, year over year, as much as 24%. And one of the ways you understand just how big that is, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have come out with the amount of money they're willing to finance for a home purchase. That has jumped up significantly over the year, up almost, I think, 18, 19% over the year before. And so they're looking at financing homes, mortgages up to $670,000 next year, I think it is, and then almost $1 million in high cost locations like California or New York.
What's happening with the sales in the high end bracket like that?
Well, they're just going gangbusters. I mean, I've been in this business long enough of watching real estate to remember when a $1 million sale was really something. Even in the Chicago metropolitan area, we have had dozens of homes that have sold for more than $2 million, $3 million, even $4 million, which was just unheard of 10 or even 15 years ago. But the typical U.S. home, Redfin came out with the new housing records that were broken this year. The typical home in U.S. sold for nearly $400,000, up 24.5% year over year. The median home sale price, they think, will hit another record as well. Supplies are, lowest level in history. We just talked about that. The typical home sold in 15 days on the market. That was a record. 60% of homes went off the market in 2 weeks. More than half of homes sold above list price. This is really crucial.
Wow.
Bidding wars have just exploded. And in markets like Boise, Idaho, which I keep coming back to, locals have been way priced out of that marketplace. In the last 5 years, I think home prices have gone up more than 50%. So really kind of crazy.
2022 will continue to be a seller's market then, huh?
It is. And the only way that this is going to change is if interest rates rise to a place where buyers simply can't buy. We're just not building homes priced at the entry level or even a step or two above entry level. Home builders have figured out that if they're going to sell a home, they might as well sell it for $1 million plus, because that's where all the profit is.
You know, we had a guest on last week, and maybe Pete will whisper in my ear the name of the company, but They do kit homes that they pre-manufacture. Kit isn't the right way to describe it, but they pre-manufacture the homes and then assemble them on site. The whole construction process goes quicker and it's less expensive. So you get a brand new home at an entry-level price instead of an entry-level price for an older home that often needs a lot of work. I'm really happy. I don't care how we do it. But it's just too bad that people are so intimidated by new home purchase costs, you know?
Well, we need to beef up a couple of different places. One is manufactured housing, which sounds terrible and everybody thinks it's a mobile home, but it isn't. It's manufactured homes are permanently affixed to ground somewhere, but they can be built far less expensively and much more rapidly because it's all built inside a factory. The other thing you're going to start seeing in 2022 are 3D home, 3D printed homes. And the first one is out. It's just starting to sell. I think they're going to be very successful. Those will also be entry-level properties. And they're actually able to build one in about 24 to 48 hours. And that's only going to get sped up. Isn't that cool, though?
Takes me that long to download an app. Mike Drew is with us from Modular Homes, talking about structured development, which is a concept. Fascinating stuff as always, Elise. We're out of time today. We'll catch up later in the week. Thanks for helping us out.
You bet, John. See you soon.
And on a phone line now is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Welcome back, Jim.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about some sports, what with the football bowl season and other things kind of getting back in gear here. Vivid Seats has acquired fantasy sports startup in a deal worth up to $40 million. That's your headline. What's your story?
Yeah, so Vivid Seats, the 20-year-old Chicago tech company, online ticket marketplace, they had hit the headlines recently in a $2 billion SPAC deal that sent them public, and they've now made their first acquisition as a publicly traded business. So today they announced the acquisition of Betcha Sports, which a daily fantasy sports startup. It combines gambling with social media. So the deal is going to be for $25 million in Vivid Seats stock and an additional $40 million if Betcha hits certain performance metrics. So an interesting acquisition here for Vivid as it kind of expands beyond tickets, right? So now it's providing its ticket buyers with an additional way to connect with the games that they're potentially going to. And so kind of an interesting way that Vivid is kind of expanding its revenue model here.
Yeah, maybe you're not the right person to ask this, but it's just interesting to me as I go to more games now back in venues, how adamant they are that you show your ticket electronically. Some places won't issue a paper ticket. I guess that's the way it's going to be everywhere very soon if it's not just about there now, huh?
Yeah, I think that's the direction that a lot of these sites are going. And also it shows just kind of also the power of the emergence of the QR code, which was, technology that felt left for dead, many years ago and has certainly seen a resurgence in recent years as we've gone contactless and just about everything that we're paying for.
Do you know, does somebody own a copyright to that? Did somebody invent that? And are they insanely rich now, the QR code?
I don't know. I hope so. I hope somebody has made some money on the QR code. But I know that, overseas, the QR code has been used, for years and years a lot more frequently than what's happened in the U.S. But I think we're starting to catch up.
It's Christmas cards now. People are sending QR codes in their Christmas cards, and you obviously scan it, hold your camera up to it, and then you get a bunch of pictures rather than just one Christmas card picture from the family. So it's obviously here to stay. Talk to me about what they describe as the Airbnb for tailgating and this Cure Bowl. What's that all about?
Yeah, so a Chicago startup called Tailgreeter is what it calls the Airbnb for tailgating. And a lot of folks might not be familiar with Tailgreeter, but they're going to be more familiar with it because they're sponsoring the Cure Bowl, which is coming up actually on this Friday on ESPN2. It's a bowl game between NIU and Coastal Carolina. And a pretty big sponsorship deal for a local Chicago startup. They were founded a couple years ago, and essentially they work just like Airbnb, but for tailgating. If you're a regular tailgater and you want to open up your game day party to some folks from out of town, you can do that and make a little money in the process. And so The company has, you know, seen a lot of growth as the in-game experience has come back. People have come back to the arenas, back to tailgating, and they say their business, you know, grew in the first couple weeks of the football season more than it did in the first 2 years of its whole existence. So some interesting growth for this Chicago startup, and now it's going to get a few more eyeballs come Friday.
Just so weird because it's, you know, tailgating is like a private party for your family and friends to invite strangers who would pay a premium for being there, right?
That's right. And, you know, there's lots of different kinds of tailgates that, you know, that they've found. Yes, it's sometimes just the small local family get-togethers, but tailgating has kind of become a professional business. Some tailgates have professional DJs and food flown in from out of state and all kinds of different party atmosphere stuff you can add on to it. So I think that they're trying to reach a wide variety of tailgaters.
There's also a Chicago startup that's getting very innovative with food, even inventive with food. What's that?
Yeah, so a company in Chicago called Aquacultured Foods. They are in the alternative seafood space. So think, you know, what the Impossible Burger has done for beef. This startup is looking to do for fish. And so they've raised $2.1 million earlier this year. They've created a fermentation process that creates these seafood products out of fungi. And they are starting with popcorn shrimp and fried calamari that is expected to hit shelves in 2022. So looking to get that both in grocery store and in restaurants for, you know, the fast-growing alternative protein space.
So it'd be popcorn, but instead of made out of soybeans or some alternative food, it would be made out of fungi?
Yeah, that's right. So they're kind of taking the mushroom approach here. You know, a lot of alternative seafood companies are, you know, sort of doing the cell-based approach to create seafood in a lab. And what they're doing is this fungi approach. And what they say able to create, you know, the first whole-cut mussel seafood alternatives as well. So beyond the popcorn shrimp, they're expecting tuna, whitefish, and scallop alternatives down the road.
Second Kitchen, talk to me about the news from them.
Yeah, so Second Kitchen, really interesting Chicago startup. They help venues like bars and breweries that don't have kitchens serve food to their clientele. So essentially, a bar can have a menu from nearby restaurants, and patrons can order food inside the bar, and Second Kitchen will deliver food items from around the neighborhood to that bar. So it allows the bar to serve food without having to have the overhead cost of an entire kitchen. And just last week, they were acquired by a really well-known ghost kitchen startup called Reef. Reef, backed by $1.5 billion from SoftBank. You know, there's really well-funded business. And now Second Kitchen is going to kind of be the provider for that kitchen service for a lot of these restaurants or a lot of these bars and breweries and other kinds of establishments.
Now, what was the place on Addison that closed down when the pandemic hit? Was a little corner bar, not too far from Wrigley, Guthrie's, with the little lamps there, and it just looked so idyllic. And they had board games in there when you'd go in, but no food. And you'd have your pizza delivered there, which was a pro and a con, but I guess this would serve a place like Guthrie's, huh?
It absolutely would. And they've found actually a big market in hotels as well. So hotels who want to offer room service, but, you know, don't want to have a whole kitchen staff and kitchen service. So this allows, you know, hotels to offer room service as an amenity without actually owning a kitchen.
I think Guthrie's is reopening, too, under new management. Do you think it's still going to be called Guthrie's? I'm looking at my producer. I think it is. Yeah. This is fun stuff. Now I'm hungry, Jim. So let's stop talking. Okay.
Thanks, Don.
Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. It's 12:44 on the Business Lunch. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deer & Company will hire up to 300 tech workers for its new office in Chicago's Fulton Market. The company recently leased 35,000 square feet at 800 West Fulton Market. Cranes reports Deer will initially bring in 150 workers over 2 years and then double the number in 3 to 5 years. The new office is expected to open in late summer or early fall of next year. Deer chose Chicago over several other cities, including San Francisco, Austin, New York, and Atlanta. A federal appeals court has dealt a blow to businesses hoping to use insurance to recover some losses incurred after Illinois ordered pandemic shutdowns. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled governmental actions that caused the closure or restriction of businesses during the early months of the pandemic are not losses that insurance has to cover. In the ruling, the court said businesses were still able to function in part even during the most restrictive phases of Governor Pritzker's orders. Restaurants could serve takeout orders and dentist offices could perform emergency work. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, listen carefully now. It's the business of food, and Steve Alexander told you're going to want to hear this.
Okay, if you've been tempted by the ads on Instagram and elsewhere for food sensitivity tests, these are the ones that look like, well, you prick your finger and drop blood on a bunch of circles on a card and then send it in, along with $150 or so. And the promise is you'll find out what foods you are sensitive to. Well, maybe, maybe not.
They're not scientifically proven.
I called on a food allergy expert for some help on this one.
Yeah, I'm Sai Nimagata. I'm an assistant professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University Medical Center, as well as a attending physician at Lurie Children's Hospital here in Chicago.
And Dr. Nimagata points out there is a difference between food allergies, which need a blood draw from your vein for testing, and food sensitivities. And the finger prick draws these sensitivity tests require, which are reminiscent of Theranos, may not tell you anything you don't already know.
Sensitivities, oh my goodness, that could be a lot of things, right? So if you have a glass of milk and you have some bloating, well, that's a sensitivity. So there's a lot of food and food products that can cause discomfort in the GI tract, and bloating, indigestion. Those are sensitivities. And again, these tests are really not that specific to try to draw out sensitivities related to each patient's symptoms.
I think it's safe to say a lot of us are what I would call food hypochondriacs who self-medicate. We decide to stop eating something because we hear somewhere that it's bad for you. Gluten comes to mind, and then we instantly feel better. Well, Dr. Nimagata says there may be more to it than that.
A lot of times, you know, when you take something out of your diet, you're also changing your behavior. You're probably eating healthier. You're not eating processed foods. You're eating less carbs and so forth. Maybe some of that also playing into feeling better.
So, if you're thinking about buying one of those instant food sensitivity tests and it's more than just a novelty purchase, that your body really does get angry with certain foods and you want medically sound information?
Gosh, I'd say, you know, go see a physician first. See what's really going on.
Dr. Sal Nimagata from Northwestern University Medical Center. Let's go to the Chicago Board of Trade right now, where there's a lot of activity in soybeans after a disappointing export report today. Beans are down about 1.8%, 22 cents lower. Wheat is trading about $7.07 higher, and corn right now is down about 4.5 cents. If I said soybeans were down $22, I meant 22 cents. From the farm to your belly, today is National Cocoa Day. It looks like we may want to wait a day or two or three to celebrate that one. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Hi, John. How are you today?
Hochberg, if you're listening, you owe us about 20% of a commercial.
Right.
Let's talk about the Time Person of the Year, because I guess that's a business story this year, isn't it?
Indeed it is. And so a thing to remember that I think got lost a little bit when this announcement first came out is that the Person of the Year is not necessarily our favorite Person of the Year, but just someone it was in a lot of headlines this year. And this is certainly somebody that you and I have talked a lot about. And so the Time Person of the Year for 2021 is Elon Musk. And what I found very interesting, and I'm not alone in this, many people on social media were pointing this out, the way he was described.
Oh, my gosh.
Funny language.
They're gushing. Are you going to quote from their review of him?
I can, certainly. They described they gave him the award for his, quote, dreams of Mars as he bestrides Earth, square-jawed and indomitable. And then at one point they said, he tosses satellites into orbit and harnesses the sun. He drives the car he created that uses no gas and barely needs a driver. With a flick of his finger, the stock market soars and swoons. So pretty bold language there to describe him. But nonetheless, he was in headlines quite a bit this year. You know, for context, remember, this isn't necessarily celebrating him as the nation's favorite person or Time's favorite person. There was a time in which even Hitler in 1938 was named as, you know, was on the cover of Time magazine, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily, here's a person we all need to celebrate, but it's really, here's a person that we really just heard a lot about this year. And I think that's really the thing to remember as we're looking at this.
Absolutely. And I suppose most business entrepreneurs are somewhat controversial for some reasons, but more power to him. The guy's, he's doing a lot for humanity, for science. And, you know, I guess if you can walk the walk, they get to talk the talk. They're not making stuff up here. He really did do all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. He did do all those things. The magazine also honored some vaccine scientists who tackled COVID-19 and made some big strides there. And Simone Biles was named Athlete of the Year. So there's other people in this mix, too. But Elon Musk is right there on the cover. And as that announcement came out, it was very entertaining to go see some of the reactions on social media, not just to him being named, but to the language used to describe him.
If you don't mind, I'd prefer that you refer to me in the future as square-jawed and indomitable. Oh, wait, that's somebody else. Speaking of business billionaires, Amazon's warehouse has collapsed, and people are talking about a number of things here, including cell phones in the workplace. What are you reading about that?
Yeah, that's right. So Bloomberg did some interesting reporting on this, and they were talking with some Amazon workers. And really what this is amounting to is there's been a ban on the warehouse floor of cell phones by Amazon. Unclear exactly why. That could be about productivity. That could be about making sure people don't take photographs of sensitive stuff, things like that. But nonetheless, there's been this ban. And they've rolled that back a little bit during the pandemic, but it's coming back in warehouses across the country. But nonetheless, the fact remains that around 8 p.m. on Friday night, at about 30 minutes before these storms hit, cell phones were hit with a notification, and the people in that warehouse, therefore, did not get that notification. So there were people in other buildings that also worked for Amazon, buildings that did not collapse nearby, that were talking with Bloomberg. And really, there's kind of this little groundswell of workers there saying, hey, I think that's a problem. We need to really rethink that. I mean, some of them used really even bolder language. One said, if they institute the no cell phone policy, I am resigning. Some said it was really boldly, like, we need weather information on our phones. We need to be notified in an emergency. So you know, it also did not help that, speaking of billionaires and Twitter, Jeff Bezos, he was also kind of tweeting a little bit about space shortly after this. He then did tweet something offering his condolences, saying, you know, the news from Edwardsville is tragic. We're heartbroken over the loss of our teammates there. Our thoughts and prayers are with their families and loved ones. But earlier he was kind of celebrating a celebrity space launch from Blue Origin. So there was, you know, a little bit more consternation that kind of swelled up around that time. But nonetheless, employees are pushing for a rethinking of this, of this cell phone ban for this very reason.
And there's some reporting that maybe the employees were allowed to have their phones there. But I heard from, and so all that may be true in that warehouse per se. I've also heard from building engineers who said if everybody in a warehouse with forklifts whizzing around is walking around with a phone in their hand, it'll actually be more dangerous to the general population of a warehouse than the once every 10 years we get hit by a bad storm. So I don't know that it's a slam dunk, but it's obviously a conversation in play right now.
Yeah, certainly. It is. I read some of that, too, of saying, like, you know, there's a lot of factors why you would keep a cell phone off of a floor, even if it was, a weather alert, you know, a rare event of a weather alert. Looking up, if there's machinery around you, that could be really, really potentially very dangerous. So it is a conversation I think we'll hear a lot more about here in the coming days and weeks.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Later in the week, we'll talk again. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.